It's a program that is devoted to those of you who, like me, have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are counterproductive, corrupt, and rotten to the core. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll-free, 877-300-7645. Scott sent me a headline that is really comical. I guess it's got to be comical, right? It says that David Griffin has resigned as president of MAD. Now, MAD is Mothers Against Drunk Driving. In East Prince County, after having been charged with the very crime that the organization lobbies against, Griffin, a former deputy chief with the Summerside Police Services and a 45-year veteran of the police department, was the volunteer president of the local chapter when, in June, he was charged with driving under the influence.
Yeah, I laughed when I saw it. MAD is one of my least favorite organizations in the one of my three least non-religious organizations in existence. And yeah, it was not an Onion article that
no,
I sent you.
Why? No, first of all, I'm just tickled pink that a former deputy chief of the police department was pulled over for a DUI. It just shows the hypocrisy of those who are supposed to be enforcing such laws. And it, of course, somebody to just human hypocrisy to for MAD to have chosen a high-ranking police officer, thinking that they were getting a bastion of moral fortitude. It just shows the foolishness in America's fascination with police, which are the worst of us, certainly not the best of us. First responders, as we call them now. But what's your issue with MAD? You know, MAD was originally founded by a woman that didn't want her her daughter to have died in vain, and didn't want other mothers to go through the excruciating pain of having some idiot who was impaired drive recklessly and kill their child. Now, you know, this in perspective before I answer the question. My wife's closest friend lost her son at 21 years old because a drunk driver plowed into the side of his car at about 10 o'clock at night, T-boned him. And this person had been drunk numerous times, had been arrested and convicted of drunk driving numerous times, was back out on the street with a valid driver's license when he killed her son.
I don't like the way they go. First off, it's like PETA. I lumped them with PETA because I don't like the way they go about doing things. I don't agree with drunk driving, and I agree that it's something that we should try and get rid of. I just think that they, maybe it's that they're too political. Maybe for me, one of the things that I really don't like is how, in their world, somebody can't make a mistake. Like, especially here in Minnesota, if you are convicted of drunk driving, you are vilified.
You should be. I mean, you're not. If you were just risking yourself, I wouldn't give a hoot.
You know, and sure.
If it's drunk bungee jumping, I don't care.
I don't like them. I don't like them. I think drunk driving should be, you know, I agree that it's something that we should be rallying against. But for them to basically take somebody's, saying that you can't make a mistake. Look, I understand if you're a 0.12 or 0.15 or you're getting into those insane ends. But if you're at a 0.09,
yeah,
that might be something that you don't realize that you.
I'm within reason. We might have some common ground here. You know, a first offense at 0.09, 0.08, even 0.1. The consequence ought not be public humiliation or are long-term deprivation of one's license. I do think that, if you're pulled over and you do you are under the influence, there should be a penalty. It should be significant, and there should be no way out of it. But second offense, or if somebody is injured during your initial offense, then it needs to be so severely punished that it dissuades others from doing it. I think second only to texting while driving, it is the most deadly crime you can commit. And it's not deadly for the individual that I care about. It's deadly for innocent people. I don't want to be on the street with a second and third time offender of drunk driving.
And in Minnesota, if you are convicted at all of it, you lose your license for at least a year. You are charged, I think it's up to like $7,500. And you, being that you have to, you can't drive, you're probably going to lose your job.
Yep. And yeah, and I would say that for 0.08, 0.09, 0.1, no one was injured, first offense. The combination of those penalties is too severe. I would agree. Second offense, they're not severe enough. Somebody is badly injured because of your decision, then they're appropriate. You know, it all depends on the set of, you know, if you make a mistake that leads to the death or severe injury of another,
then you're not,
you don't get the excuse
of other things,
right?
Yeah, you don't get murder in that case.
Yeah, you don't get the excuse of I made a mistake. You know, please forgive me.
But that's the thing, is you're not, at that point, you're being charged with other crimes. You're being charged with vehicular homicide. You're being charged with reckless endangerment. Things of that nature.
That's true.
I mean,
that's,
getting pulled over because you didn't signal to change lanes, and then the cop finds out that you were drinking and you're over the limit. I mean, if you're swerving around the road, obviously that's the thing.
I would agree that if you're pulled over for some other reason, you didn't injure anybody. And the cop just wants to be belligerent and test you, and the limit is you test it at the lower end of the limit. The first offense ought not be as draconian as it is in Minnesota, but the second offense, absolutely.
Well, yeah. Well, at the second offense, you're obviously making a habit out of it, and you're starting to show that you have no remorse,
right?
Or regard
for the safety of others.
If you keep making the same mistake, you obviously don't care that you're making that mistake,
right?
So I agree with that. That things should.
My view on law is pretty straightforward. I'm free will sort of a person. I don't think the government should impose any law on the restriction of personal rights. Nor have any penalty for what anybody chooses to do, so long as they are not infringing on the rights of others, the liberty or the safety and health of others. You ought to be able to do whatever you want to do. But when you do something that infringes on the rights, safety and health, even the life of others, then that's the place where the law has to have teeth. It needs to be fairly applied, and we need to have consequence that dissuades people from doing those things. If you're going to legalize, for example, I'd like to have all drugs legalized and all drugs be viewed as stupid to use. But if you're going to do that, you really have to have teeth on impaired driving. Now, I'm going to tell you, having seen a lot of impaired drivers that were either under the influence of prescription drugs, illegal drugs, or alcohol, and having driven a lot recently, and now driving in a state where texting and driving is not illegal, I'm going to tell you that the situational awareness and the consequence of texting and driving is significantly worse than driving under the influence. And they're weaving in and out of lanes. They're driving at half of the speed limit. They're oblivious. And you know, if you can't expect people to respond in a rational, conscious way on the roads, it's you know, bad things are going to happen. And
there,
you know,
again, it might just be I might just have the bias against MAD because of how the interactions that I've seen here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
To where in Minnesota, it's they're basically like an anti-gun group. To where rather than blaming the person that's doing it, they want to blame alcohol and things like that.
Yeah, that's wrong. That's wrong. Yeah, it's not, the problem is not alcohol. It's the lack of responsibility, the lack of moral and judgment, the lack of ability to exercise good judgment. I mean, I think that in most cases, people not having a reason to live, not having proper guidance as they're growing up, not being properly educated, instead being indoctrinated. It's a amoral culture. And so there's a lot of reasons that have caused us to abuse all manner of drugs, prescription drugs, psychiatric drugs, painkillers, mood elevators, recreational drugs, serious drugs like heroin and cocaine, as well as alcohol. There are reasons that all of the use of all of those things is on the rise, and there's a reason that people are using those things and then endangering the lives of others. And I think it just goes right back to political correctness, the indoctrination that is taking place in the schools and the media and in politics as opposed to education.
So I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I think we agree on more of this than we disagree on as it relates to drunk driving and MAD. I can tell you that I am actually the beneficiary of a cop back a long time ago. Back when I was probably 18 years old, maybe 19 years old. I was driving back from a fraternity function. I was on the fraternity row. I was about 100 yards from my parking spot. And a cop pulled me over when I was absolutely drunk, and off because I was crawling down the street at an incredibly slow speed. We'll return. Yes, and a long time ago in a faraway kingdom, a place and time very different than today, the police officer de-escalated the situation. I volunteered to walk. I was, 100 steps from my fraternity house. Toss the keys in the car, to lock them in the car, and not drive again until I was in better shape. And, at the time, I was traveling, about probably 3 or 4 miles an hour. I was so concerned about not hurting anyone. And, I pulled over and parked. The cop said, I think that's a good call. And it was that whole experience of seeing the flashing red lights behind the car when I knew I was impaired was enough to cause me never to do that again. And I haven't since. We have Rob on the line, who is our cannabis expert. The difference between Rob and myself on cannabis is probably that while I'm wholly and completely supportive of it being legalized, I'm not a someone who is ready to endorse its use. In other words, you ought to be able to use it, but I'm not to the point where I would say, boy, you ought to use it. And I think, Rob, you are more in the ought to use it rather than ought to be able to use it.
It's Welcome okay back. That you're there right now, Craig, as long as you don't stay there. So, it's fine. I understand. It's all about learning information.
Yeah.
The point I wanted to prove the other day is you're talking about the Schedule One drugs that people went to jail over them.
Right.
Well, cannabis is a Schedule One.
Yeah.
And, they got up there with heroin and...
Yeah, which is just stupid. I mean, first of all,
cocaine's a
I even think that heroin and crystal meth ought to be legalized. If you're using either one of the two, you are absolutely brain dead. I mean, the world would be better off without you. You know, if you've gotten to the place that you're using poisons like that, which there is no one that has ever survived long-term use of either of those drugs. They eat you up alive. They literally destroy you. And so somebody that would choose to destroy themselves that way, they're such a blight on society and so prone to doing things that are counterproductive. The world would be better off without you. So, and I want to be really harsh when I say I think you ought to have the right to kill yourself if you want to. But, you know, when you move where, you know, I don't care if you smoke weed or not, I think it's probably less harmful than wine and beer, or on par with wine and beer. And there's benefits of both wine and beer. And I use both. So, you know, I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say I ought not use marijuana. I think you ought to be allowed to. It should be decriminalized, absolutely. But there's a huge difference between marijuana and heroin and
still scheduled the same way.
Yeah, and that's just stupid. That just shows how stupid our government is.
Right. Absolutely, and it means it has no medicinal benefit whatsoever. That's what a Schedule One is all about.
Even heroin has a medicinal benefit.
Yeah, in the right form.
In the right form and the right place.
Right.
Heroin will relieve pain, and you know, there's some surgical procedures. There's other kinds of things where in a hospital, under the absolute right circumstances, heroin has an advantage. But taken recreationally for the euphoria, oh, man, stupid.
Yeah. I mean, they make Vicodin out of heroin. Heroin and Vicodin are opiates. You know, they're pretty much the same thing. But regardless, now the United States has the patent number 6635 or 30507. Now, a federal entity has a patent on a plant that they say is non-medicinal.
Yeah,
how could that be?
Oh, I know. It's, and clearly, there are medicinal benefits of marijuana. There's no denying. Now, I've been to the site and I did a commentary after I think we were together on it. And I went to a site and I talked about the claims in terms of medicinal benefits. And I think that the advocates of cannabis are probably blowing some smoke, so to speak. But that doesn't mean that there aren't definite benefits. And we know absolutely that it is a it has a tendency to increase appetite, and increasing appetite is life and death in some scenarios. And it has a tendency to diminish nausea, which can make enduring chemotherapy, for example, tolerable. It's also, I understand, has definite benefits in things like glaucoma and other eye issues. So you're not going to get an argument from me that it's factual that marijuana has some medical benefits. Well, before we move on to a couple of happenings in Israel, I wanted to make sure you had an opportunity to have a parting shot on your thoughts on drunk driving. My views are a little more severe than our Scots in that regard, or just your advocacy for cannabis as a whole.
Well, a lot of it has to do, like you said, with the judgment on the officer that's pulling you over. I was pulled over, you know, 30 years ago with a case of beer and smoking a cigar and then my Trans Am, and they took my case of beer and told me to, you know, go home, basically.
Yeah.
But, I mean, nowadays they're not going to do that. They saved me from, you know, a record for the rest of my life, possibly.
Right. Yes.
So, you know, it's not like that anymore, and that's what I tell my sons, which they're not advocates of drinking anyhow.
Right.
But, you know, my father was killed when I was a year old, and it really, you know, caused me to have such a roller coaster life. It's ridiculous. But, you know, so I was always kind of partial to not drinking for that reason. But, you know, I think that there should be some stern, you know, more people are killed from drunk driving than, you know, one of the biggest killers in our...
Yeah, I think it's number one or number two in the, in the country. And it's and if it was just a killer of the participant, in drunk driving as opposed to the victim, then, you know, I wouldn't be as concerned. But it is a... It's a crime that is certainly can never be labeled the victimless. So yeah, I'm concerned about it. Did your father's death have anything to do with alcohol?
Yeah. He was ran off into an oak tree by a drunk driver.
Mm.
Like I said, when he was only 19 years old, I was a year old.
Wow.
They had me at a young age, but then you know, I mean, wow. it sent me. Wow. You know, and then I had to grow up with a stepfather who was abusive, and
oh just, God,
it was tragic. You know, so. For
wow.
Me to be here right now and to know Yah is just amazing.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it doesn't really matter our past and you know it's we all come to this place the same way, and when we get here we're all the same. Individual in terms of personalities. I mean, you've got a unique approach and attitude, and that's the wonderful part. We're not homogenized, but yet we're all equal in terms of our share of all that Yahweh has to give. So,
yeah, and I used to share the same view on cannabis as you did not too long ago, but you know, I was faced with the death or life situation, and I had to either continue on with the program that they wanted with these pharmaceuticals and this radiation and everything, or I had to take it in my own hands, and maybe it was just placebo that got me through it. But one way or another, I didn't smoke cannabis. I ate it.
Wow.
You know, and I ate it, and I basically infringed on the federal patent, made my own. And,
wow.
That's what it is. It's not the smoking is the most medicinal, even though it does have a medicinal effect on, I don't know, different things like depression or, you know, a lot of the post-traumatic stress. I'm a certified caregiver, so I actually am certified by the state of Michigan to, you know, grow, cultivate, and distribute the medicine legally under state law. But I've got like 400 patients. That I deal with, and
wow,
it's amazing what the effect is on everybody.
So you have personal experience of having gone through something that that without it, you may not have come out alive.
Mentally and physically. I mean, they had me on 17 different prescription medicines. I had idiopathic thrombocytopenia platelet disease, and they don't know how I got it. It's idiopathic, but and they don't know why I had it. They tested me for leukemia, AIDS. I mean, everything that, you know, would cause your platelets basically to diminish in your blood. And my body was killing itself. So they started to try and shock it back into order with prednisone. And I about lost my mind during that period of time. I took it for like a year, sold my business for pennies on a dollar, prepared to die. I was so depressed.
Wow.
You know, so finally it come to the point where I had to start doing my research. I couldn't work.
Wow.
So I had a lot of time to...
Because the cocktail of drugs they were giving you was just tearing you apart.
Unbelievable, Craig. I swear to God. I would look at it in my hand, and before I took them, I knew that in about an hour I was going to think about shooting myself.
Wow.
I mean, because you felt worthless. I mean,
wow.
They just got you to the point where I had to quit taking them. I threw them in the garbage. I got my license to you know, basically use cannabis, and then I went to a club and started buying the oil and eating it. And I ate about 0.3 grams per day. And after 90 days, I mean, honestly, I've never been back for a checkup. And this was in 2009.
Wow.
I walked out of my doctor's office. They took my spleen out, told me that was going to fix it. It didn't work. I went back in. I said, well, what are my options now? And she said, radiation or an experimental pill cut end plate, and it was $600 a week, so it was like, no way could I do that. So I walked out of there and never went back.
Wow.
And that was in 2009, and I just ate the oil. Like I said, it may have been placebo, but it wasn't long that I started eating it that I was like, what did you do? Why did you sell your business? Why did you do all this stuff? And I had to get up and go out and start working again, and it helped me to do that. So before I was immobilized in a home, I didn't even want to leave. You know, I didn't want to go out of my own house. It was.
But a lot of that was just that you were overprescribed things that that were actually counterproductive in your system.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's a very odd thing that doctors would prescribe medications when they haven't diagnosed the problem. I mean that's it's brain death. I mean, they never properly diagnose the cause of your problem. And so they knew this, the consequence of the problem. Your platelets were diminished, but they never identified the cause. So to prescribe very heavy medications and a cocktail of them, when they never identified the cause, it seems insane to me. So,
and every time I was born with a complaint, they would add one or two to the mixture. They wouldn't take anything away.
Wow.
You know, so it got to the point where I just couldn't eat them anymore. I mean, I was contemplating suicide, and that was one of the side effects. And I knew it. I read the side effects, and I never felt that way before. I know I was down and out and thought I was going to die, you know, but I still had two boys that I had to. I was a single father, so I didn't know what to do, you know. And I just took my chances and went with all natural ways. So.
Yeah, and you know, it could be one of two things. And I think you are right in taking the approach of that that getting off of those drugs and taking something that wasn't poisoning your body. May, since you were so desirous of getting back to health, may have served as a placebo. And the combination of stopping the poisons, this constant cocktail of poisons, saying no to that, and then doing something that you thought really had a chance to make you feel better, it could have been a placebo effect, because the mind is a very powerful healer. When your mind's wrong, you're not going to get healthy. When your mind's right, you have a shot to get healthy. The second is that there was something in cannabis that did stimulate a positive result, and it could have been a combination of getting off the poisons and stimulating a positive result. You probably never know. But I think your approach here and your testimony is therefore credible, because you're admitting you may never know.
No, I may not. And there's not been enough research done on it. It's been a Schedule 1, non-medicinal, this whole time, since, you know, the 30s. As soon as prohibition was lifted, they slapped the, you know, prohibition, or they slapped, they started the war on drugs, and they looped cannabis in there. The thing that's really odd about it is cannabis has more than one form. It has a sativa industrial form, and it has an indica medical form. They looped both of them into the same Schedule 1, even though the industrial form creates no THC.
Hmm. So in the medical form, when you were to consume it, either in an oil or in food, did it have a any kind of a of an hallucinogenic effect or a narcotic effect of any kind, or was it was there just simply you were taking it and you didn't feel any different having taken it versus if you smoked it, you're going to have a marijuana high?
Well, this is the most important thing, especially for a new patient, and it's something you got to be very careful about, because you can over-medicate them, and then they won't like the feeling of it, and they won't continue on with the program. But I learned both ways. I took too much, and it made me to the point where, I mean, it didn't make you, you know, you don't hallucinate or nothing. You basically just become extra tired, and you know, you just want to sleep, and that's awesome.
Yes, it's kind of like drinking too much. If I drink too much, I just want to go to sleep.
Same with me. I can't even drink a glass of wine without getting tired. But
I can have a glass of wine and be okay with a meal. But if I drink a glass of wine, even a small glass of wine without a meal, I want to go to sleep. But you know, I'm Indian, so I don't process it very well. And malaria destroyed. I've had both malaria and hepatitis because of my travels, and they destroyed my ability to process alcohol. So I have to have, you know, extreme moderation. So what you're saying is, if you ingest it by eating it, drinking it, if you will, in excess, it'll make you sleepy. And if you take the right amount,
it'll make you feel miserable. I mean, if you take too much of the oil, it won't hurt you. It has no like bad side effects.
Right.
But you'll wish you wouldn't have done it. You know what I mean? You'll be really, really what they call high. You know, you'd be a lot of. But a lot of people need this that are in some serious chemo treatments or whatever. They need to sleep. They need to eat.
Right.
Stuff they don't normally get to do. You can't normally get a good night's sleep when you're strung out on Vicodin. You know what I mean? Just one thing after another. But regardless, I took just enough to where it didn't give me the high feeling, which was only 0.3 gram, which is a very small amount. I put it in my own little capsules and, you know, I weighed it up to make sure. But if I took 0.5, I couldn't go to work. You know, I couldn't really deal with life, I guess, in
right.
the normal fashion. I just would want to sit and lay down and sleep and watch TV. So I got to the point, and I have to do this with each patient, find out what medicine at what dosage works properly for them. You know, each...
I think that in lightweight drugs like this, it's an escape mechanism. Most people will use it to escape reality. Now, in the case of drinking beer and wine and fairly light cannabis use, smoking it, you know, it's a social thing too. But you know, and the social part of it, I've got no issue with, and. The escapism part of it, where it enables you to escape, I can only see that being beneficial if you are enduring chemo. One of my wife's closest friends has been treated now for 2 years now for cancer and all various mixtures of chemotherapy. And, man, she is just in misery. Rob, it's clear that you understand and have researched and are an expert when it comes to whether or not cannabis in a pill form or oil form to be ingested has benefits and how it should be prescribed and never over-prescribed, and that there's a lot of people that I am certain having access to it can benefit.
Yes. Yeah, that was important for me, Craig, because, you know, I want my micro family to know that there's alternatives. You don't have to go with the pharmaceuticals. And they're just constructs of humanity, you know.
I don't look at them as conspiratorial, which I know a lot of people do. And I don't think they're the least bit conspiratorial. But in your particular case, the thing that strikes me is the medical and pharmacy, combine prescribed very serious poisons for you that individually in the right circumstance might have been okay, but collectively, without having diagnosed the cause of your problem, strike me as insane. So you have highly educated people that did not have the capacity to exercise good judgment prescribing medications before understanding the cause of the problem.
Well, I fell down a flight of stairs. I was going up to my office. I had a second floor office within my business, and I fell down the stairs, and they took me to the emergency clinic because I just couldn't stand up. And then they took me straight to the hospital, and I was in ICU for 12 days because my platelet low level was at 5,000, which is almost dead. You could bleed internally for no reason at that level.
Right.
So they wouldn't let me move, brush my teeth, shave, nothing.
Right.
Doing blood transfusions. Well, I had another doctor come in because I was complaining about my heart because the consistency of my blood was causing me to have pains in my heart. He wanted to go and put a stent in my chest right off the bat.
Wow.
I was like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Of course, he's a Muslim. So,
great.
And I repaired a lot of their vehicles in my day, and I was like, I got to get a second opinion on this. Too many things are happening at one time.
Right, yeah.
So once I got out, I got a first opinion. They said, your heart's perfectly healthy, like a 20-year-old.
Wow.
Second opinion, same thing.
Wow.
If I allowed them to, they would have cut my chest open.
Wow.
And put a $24,000 stent in my heart.
Wow.
Yeah, and I did, so all these things added up, you know. You don't have to call it conspiracy, but I call it profit.
I think that that the first of all a Muslim educated in a foreign country that gets to practice medicine here,
you don't have much of a choice.
Yeah, I know, that's really foolhardy. I mean, I would absolutely never under any circumstance go to an Islamic doctor because I know that anybody dumb enough to be a Muslim is not smart enough to prescribe anything for me. Now the story, though, that was worth telling, absolutely worth telling, is not so much the cannabis story. It is the story of an individual having a lifetime of rough road, of having their father killed at 19 when they're 1 year old, driven off the road into a ditch by a drunk driver, and the consequence of that, and then the reality that you, like me, grew up with an abusive father. And it is extraordinarily difficult to grow up without a father and then to inherit an abusive father. The number of people that can recover from that are few and far between. And yet you did, and then you were struck by this physical ailment. And that rather than blaming God and screaming and, yeah, as you ultimately realized, I can't do to my children what was done to me. I need to survive for my kids. And you took responsibility for your own life, your own health. And in that process, when you became clear of mind, then you said, you know, there's more than health in my physical body. I've got a soul, too. Let me attack that the same way. And you came to study what Yahweh had to say. And with clear mind and with free will, accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant. That's a story worth telling. You weren't born in privilege. You had to fight through it.
We all come to Yah in different ways. We all have a different path. Mm-hmm. We're all different types of people, I've noticed, in the Maker family, you know.
Yeah, we are.
Got different paths. We're different levels of society, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
We're just all Maker, brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Your story is very much the same, different cause and consequence, but is the story that is told by so many in our group. And it's wonderful to see someone triumph over hardship.